This is an ABC podcast.
Roots and Shoots Gardening on 102.5 ABC Perth and ABC Radio WA.
Call now, 1300 221 025, if you would like to speak directly to the garden goddess that is Sabrina Hahn, who has news of an exciting thing for us today.
I do, Amber. So, you know how you had everything is terrible, and yes, then you had everything is amazing in the sky.
Yes.
Everything is amazing in the ground as well.
Yes.
So on Wednesday morning, the official launch of the Corridors for Carnabies was launched.
Woo-hoo!
Yay!
What is the Corridors for Carnabies?
Okay, so this is a major big plan, and we got funding of $3.3 million to get this corridor up and running as part of the Amazon Right Now Climate Fund. So what we are going to do is plant over 200,000 banksias over 3 years. And it's been delivered through the University of Western Australia's Conservation and Restoration Sciences Group, spearheaded by the most wonderful and amazing Professor Kingsley Dixon, who we love to death. So the corridor really is about biodiversity conservation in urban areas, and it's going to bring together all the communities, technology, indigenous knowledge, ecological science, and everyone who's listening to this program.
And I think you are a big part of the reason that it's had such a successful liftoff. Tell me how many people have visited the site.
So the Carnabies for Cockatoo website went up. Within 24 hours, we had over 24,000 people join.
Go and have another 24,000 if you're out there listening.
So when you go through the website, it tells you everything about this project. And at the very bottom, there is a little sign saying, join the flock. If you tick the join the flock box, you will be part of the flock that is now going to be involved in this corridor, and I've been involved in it from the very beginning. Part of my role will be to have a supplement food source that's faster growing, so the cockatoos have got something to eat while this corridor grows up. And so I will be working with schools and community groups.
Fantastic.
And local councils.
Yeah.
We'll be putting in lots of trees. But there's a world first. So part of this funding is going towards AI recognition of flocks, but also individual birds.
Great, okay.
Face recognition.
Wow.
For cockatoos.
Nice.
So What we want the general public to get involved in is when you have a flock of Carnabies coming across, or Bordens, very hard to tell the difference between the two, you'll be able to lift your phone up to the flock that's flying past, and AI will count them, because it's so difficult to
yes,
count.
Yes, right.
So if we are encouraging everyone to get on board this. So it's such a good
corridors
news story.
For Carnabies, F-O-R, so, it's not the number.
Yeah, so it's Corridors with an S, F-O-R, Carnabies with one B and one Y. So C-O-R-R-I-D-O-R-S, F-O-R, C-A-R-N-A-B-Y-S .com. Be part of our flock.
Jackie's part of our flock. Hello, Jackie. Welcome to the flock. What's your question for Sab?
Hello, I just put food in my mouth.
Sorry.
I'm so
sorry.
I'm eating my vegetables.
It's better than just being on the toilet, though, Jackie.
No, I've done that. I made sure I did that.
There she is. There she is. She's got the phone on speaker.
What are you having for breakfast, Jackie?
I have vegetables for breakfast.
Nice. That's great.
Because I figure if I'm naughty at the end of the day, I'm stuck on the right thing.
I love to
fair,
hear this.
Fair enough.
Thank you.
What would you like
I'm
to ask Sabrina?
Don't be nervous.
I know that that when you're mixing soil conditioner, it's usually a 50 with your existing soil.
Depending on what you're putting in, yep.
Oh, natives. So I'm doing a new verge. I've sent a photo just to show you really what the soil is. It's not soil, it's sand. So I suppose my question is, when you don't have existing gardens to mix with it,
okay,
is it still the same mix?
No. If you are putting in native plants, Jackie, that's way too much compost or soil conditioner to put in. I'm looking at your vacant verge at present.
God so, has forsaken that verge.
You've actually been up there a few years ago. It's just I take a long time to do stuff. But that's
quite all right. You can take as long as you want, Jackie. So what I would suggest is you only use about 20% compost, but I would be putting in 10% clay.
Okay.
So you can buy clay in bags, and if you can mix that in with the soil, Jackie, that would be sensational. There's also a bucket of stuff that you can get which has clay and minerals in it, and it's a cure for coastal sands. That's a hint.
Okay.
You can mix that in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm. So we're looking at a 20% instead of a 50%.
Yeah, don't. That's way too much for native plants.
Okay.
Yeah.
I also sent you. Oh, can I quickly just the photos also of my sad grevilleas? Possibly mean I've put too much landscape mix in with them.
Yeah, because grevs don't want that really rich soil. We can't find your picture of the grevillea, but...
It is with the same lot as the verge.
Oh, okay.
Scrolling down. It's, Jackie, I'll just let you know that the text messages come bouncing through here. Oh, here we go.
Okay.
That's such a rage.
Oh, ooh. Yes. That's not happy. It's way too rich for that particular grev. I would be
getting some sand in there.
Yeah, get a bit of sand in there. Okay. Yeah,
come to my place. You can have a bit of mine.
You're so sweet. No, I've got plenty of sand.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think there's no shortage of sand in Yanchep.
No, thank you.
Thanks, Jackie. Jonathan is in Netherlands. Good morning, Jonathan. What's your question for Sab?
Hi, Sabrina and Amber. And by the way, we've got endless flocks of carnivores that come to our liquid amber. They just love the conkers in the liquid amber.
Now, so, I want to talk about that. I'm pleased you brought that up, Jonathan, because people will see because the carnivores are starving. They will see them in liquid ambers and even in chewets and things like that. So the problem with that is the seed is so fine, there's actually no nutrition in it. Mm. So when you see them in your liquid amber, they are probably starving and there's nothing else around for them. And the reason we're encouraging people to put in things like macadamias and the almonds is that one macadamia is equivalent to 6 big Banksia cones.
Wow.
So
nutrient-wise.
Yeah, so nutrient-wise, the macadamias, pecans and almonds are a great sort of shortstop for them to get them through this until we can get either save the trees that we have, particularly our Jarrah Marri forests and the Banksia woodlands. But and good on you anyway.
Well, that wasn't my question. But
no.
Maybe it's the Lindor ball for them because it's no nutrition, but they obviously love it because they just live into them.
Yeah, I know. It's great and you don't have to prune them yourself.
Exactly. can I ask about our peppermint tree? So we've got about 9 months ago we got the council to plant a peppermint on the verge.
Yep.
And it was doing well, and then during summer it kind of had a period of trying to die off in the hot weather, and we put some water on it, it came back. But for the last 6 weeks or so it's just been, looks like it's trying to die again from the bottom.
Yeah.
Started in some warm weather, but wasn't ridiculously hot, but we hadn't put water on it. We turned the sprinklers off, so it hadn't had water for about 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been trying to water it again, and it just still seems to be getting worse. I sent a couple of photos.
Yeah, but I can see it's sort of dying from the bottom upwards.
Yeah, exactly. Is it salvageable?
Yes. Now, I'm just a bit concerned why it's dying. Usually when you see that in a peppy tree, there's something happening down at the root system, mm-hmm. and you wouldn't know unless you dug it up and checked it out. So what right. I want you to do is to prune off all those lower branches. Then I want you to take 50% off the top of the tree.
Right.
Okay, so under prune, right up to where the very first, you've got the first rubber cord holding it in between the two stakes.
Yeah.
And then I want you to take 50% of what is left off the top just to take a bit of stress off it. And those, the dead branches down the bottom are not going to recover. So you may as well cut those off, Jonathan.
And do we need to put more water on it, or not worry about that?
Well, we've got a fair bit of rain coming. I don't think you need to, but what I would do is get some humate and seaweed and fish solution onto that and drench the soil in it.
And what do you say, humate? What's that?
Okay, so there are quite a few products that are available now that is sort of like liquid compost, and then they've got all the microbial stuff in them, the fungi and the bacteria. But humates is basically made from compost, but it feeds the soil. So if there's some sort of bacteria in among the root system or a bacteria, then that will help the plant actually fight against that.
Okay, that sounds good. My wife's here and she's giving me a thumbs up. She's going to do all this.
Fantastic. Okay, beautiful.
Thanks, thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Stephen is in Busselton. Hi, Stephen. How's it going?
Pretty good, thanks very much, love. I hope we'll find you bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
You do. Always bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Problem with my fig tree, it's been pruned once or twice in its 10 years of life.
Yeah.
It's been a lousy fruiter.
Oh.
And it has about 10 main trunks, or, 10 big branches.
Yeah.
And it's about 3 metres, 4 metres high.
Yeah.
Now, I need to know how much I can chop it back.
50%.
I bought a new chainsaw.
Ah, that's 50%. The way to go. I bought a new chain for my chainsaw the other day. I'm very excited. Haven't got to use it yet, but it's so exciting. It's almost as good as you've baked a cake and it's turned out to be an absolute ripper.
I can sense Stephen's excitement.
Yeah, when you get a new chain for your chainsaw, it's about the same as taking a cake out of the oven, Amber. It's very exciting.
I'm trying to think of some craft corollary. New sewing machine, maybe. Stephen, I'm so happy for you.
So you can take 50% off that, Stephen.
Go nuts.
Go down really on the main trunks as well as the height.
Absolutely. My fig tree, because I like to be able to reach most of the figs.
Yeah, yeah.
Every 2 years I show no mercy and I'm out there with the chainsaw. Loves it.
Excellent.
Stephen,
okay, will I get fruit this coming season?
Probably not.
Yeah, I thought so.
No, you will get a bit. You will get some,
that's
Stephen.
All I've ever given. It's been a miserable bugger.
Oh, well, maybe go 2/3. No, don't do that. Just 50%.
Yeah, 50%. Listen, thanks very much. And the wife's given you a thumbs up as well. To get that fig tree down.
You have permission to join the men who prune too much, but have permission from their wives.
Yes.
Stephen, enjoy your new chainsaw.
It's going to be in the good books.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, Stephen. Mark is in Waikiki. Hello, Mark. What would you like to ask Sab?
Good morning, ladies. Yes, I've got a cycad which last heat wave we had towards the end of summer got some browning through the fronds.
Yeah.
And it's never come back.
No, it won't.
And even now it's looking a bit ill.
Yep. Now, cycads when they're in – so when you go up to Carnarvon, you will see the cycads in the main street there that are in full sun. And, of course, it gets quite hot up there. But they have much higher humidity. So, and they have a different soil type. So the big problem with cycads, particularly in alkaline soils, is they suffer very much from a trace element deficiency. Okay? So it's not just the heat. It's the fact that there's no good tucker around them and they cannot access – any of the trace elements, magnesium, manganese, iron, any of that. So what I want you to do is cut those brown fronds off because they will never recover. Go and buy yourself a bag of compost and then go and get some trace minerals. So trace elements and trace minerals. And you will need to drench your cycad with trace elements, which you mix in with water every 2 weeks during winter, and then it will cope with the next summer that's coming.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Yep.
Excellent.
All right. Beautiful.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Beverly's in Mandurah. Hello, Beverly. Are you choking on your cup of tea there? Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah. I have a hedge of Gardenia floridas, extremely healthy, vigorous growing. They're probably about 2.5 metres high.
Yep.
But they've just, I don't know whether to give them a bit of a trim up because they're sort of hanging over a pathway.
Right.
Is it the right time?
No.
No.
It's a bit.
I knew you were going to say that.
Even though you probably have time to do it now, Beverly, you're better off doing it really early spring.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you can wait till then.
Yeah, I hate to ruin them.
Yeah. So it's not a good idea in our climate to prune them during the winter period.
No. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Beverly.
Day off for you, Beverly. Go on, do something else. Where are my knitters at? Is there a crossover between knitters and gardeners? I want to know.
What would be the equivalent to getting a new blade for your chainsaw or a new chainsaw?
Look, I think a sewing machine's probably more expensive, but maybe, I don't know, an overlocker or something? A tool
of some sort.
I'm pretty tooled up in the craft department.
I bet you are, Amber. Have you got a knitting machine?
No.
Oh.
I'm the knitting machine.
Yeah, I like the knitty with the fingers. Yeah.
You were just saying you were going to knit a vest. Yeah. We've got a couple of lines free, 1300 221025, to get in touch with Sabrina Hahn here on Roots and Shoots on 102.5 ABC Radio Perth. Question, just showing off. Oh, this is nice. My tree in Wilson. The cockies don't seem to eat the ensuing pods on the limbs, says Ed, what is that?
That's a hakea. They like the seed pods on the hakea. Their favourite things really are the banksias and, of course, marries. But they will definitely hook into hakea nuts. And they're very difficult. I was talking to Kingsley about why. Because they've observed with the cockatoos, the carnabies, they know how to, with a macadamia nut, they turn the nut around and they find the exact spot to put the beak to crack it open.
Okay.
They're the only bird that can crack open a macadamia nut.
Yeah, yeah.
And Kingsley was saying, well, we forget that millions and millions of years ago, most of Australia was all rainforest. Right. So the birds, so we would have had macadamias, which are native to Queensland and northern New South Wales. Macadamias would have been spread right across Australia at one stage because of the climate. So that it's really interesting that the birds have passed that knowledge down through millions of years.
That is extraordinary.
Isn't that amazing? They're just the most incredible birds.
Charles Darwin knew these things.
He did.
Hey, I didn't know that he had 10 kids and he married his cousin.
Yeah, quite common to marry your cousin back then.
Yeah, but he was the one that said perhaps we shouldn't be doing this. On account of his brood.
Yeah, but that's a sign of a true scientist, isn't it? Like you look what's closest to home and you learn from that.
So perhaps I shouldn't have married my cousin.
Perhaps the gene pool's a little bit too close here.
A bit narrow. Stefano is in Greenwood. Stefano, you have sent me a photograph of what?
Well, I don't know exactly. It's some flowers that are growing by the edge.
I was going to find the photo.
I've heard that they might be invasive or people want them out because they're too voracious or something. Is that the species they people are concerned about?
Well, we are trying to find your photograph.
See, this is the problem.
What colour is it? So we might be able to...
Mostly green.
Oh. It's green.
There we go. I found you.
Here we are.
There we go.
Yeah.
The flowers aren't open.
Gazania. You don't want them. Weeds.
I don't want
pull them out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got plenty to pull out then.
Gazanias are a major pest problem everywhere, particularly in the wheat belt area. I noticed that some of the bloody nurseries were still selling them, which I'm astonished at.
I remember that name.
They're from South
Africa. Gazania. Is it Gazania?
Gazania.
Yep, get rid of that, Stefano. Is that the end of our conversation?
Yep, pull them all out.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stefano.
Condolences to you.
Yeah.
Sue is in Harvey. Good morning, Sue. What's your question for Sab?
Good morning, ladies, on this fresh morning in Harvey.
Oh, I bet you it was about 2 degrees down there.
Sabrina, I got a fairy magnolia.
Yeah.
And I've had it for about 3 years, and it's never done particularly well. I've switched it into different spots in the garden, thinking it was getting too much sun, and it's currently in a pot.
Yeah.
And it's just developed on its leaves brown spots.
Okay.
I sent through a photo, but I don't know if you managed to see it.
Sometimes, because we get so many texts, it's always difficult to see, to catch up with.
I can imagine. It's just never flowered. It has what I think are going to become flowers.
The buds, and then they fall off.
The buds.
Yeah.
Well, they just sit there, and then they don't ever open. So.
I would up the potassium on that, Sue.
Okay.
You can actually get liquid potassium, and you can spray it or pour it all over the – well, I would do both. I would drench the soil with potassium, but also spray all the foliage. So sometimes if you have a potassium deficiency, then you won't, the buds won't actually stay on and develop into flowers.
Okay.
So I would try that. In fact, I would give them trace elements as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So That would be my take. I doubt if it's a fungal or bacterial problem. I think you're going to find that it's a trace element deficiency, in particular potassium.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much. Love the show. Always listening.
Thank you, Sue.
Champion.
Have a lovely day and a weekend.
Thank you.
Jackie from Yanship has sent through a photograph of her vegetable breakfast.
Oh, my God. She's got a beautiful capsicum. They're all raw. Capsicum, carrot. Cucumber.
Broccoli.
Raw broccoli. Oh, God.
Some nuts in there? Yeah, nuts.
She's a champion eating raw broccoli first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
And some yogurt.
I don't know why I'm so entranced by the notion of vegetables for breakfast. I shouldn't be, but I feel like it's something that I would like to do.
I could eat them cooked. I don't know if I could go. I don't like to chew in the morning. Yeah, people have granola and then all that raw food in a bowl.
I mean, I can attest to the fact that she's got her original teeth. It's not that she can't find her teeth.
I just think it's a lot of effort for first thing in the morning.
What do you want to do? Just a straw and puree. Baby food.
No, I have breakfast like at 10:30 because I can't cope with chewing that early in the morning.
I used to have a coffee and a ciggy. So, you know, I should – not anymore, I would like to point
nothing
out.
Nothing wrong with that.
Oh, there was a lot wrong with that.
I have a cup of tea. No, I have a pot of tea. I drink the entire pot.
Wow.
I have 4 cups of tea, one after the other, bang, 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 and a piece of toast and Vegemite. And then around 10:30, I think I could probably chew those oats now. And away I go.
Oats! Just even an oat is too challenging.
Oh, you couldn't eat, you know. You don't want to have to chew stuff in the morning.
I do love this. I do love people's peccadillos. We've learnt something about Sabrina Hahn that we didn't know last week, and it has amused me no end. Gloria is in Kensington. Gloria, what do you have for breakfast?
Oh, coffee.
Did you have coffee and a ciggy or just coffee?
No, just coffee.
Just coffee.
And a
coffee.
Slow look
good
around.
Girl.
What's going on in Kensington?
Okay. Many years ago, my late husband planted three citrus trees, which is adorable.
Yeah.
Since then, though, a gum tree, a bottle brush, a weeping pepper and conifers were planted.
God.
And they have exploded. Now, basically, my question is, obviously, as my other trees get so much bigger, my citrus trees are not going to get the full sun that Google seems to say they should be getting.
No. They will not. Yeah, and worse than that, Gloria, they will not be getting any nutrients because all those trees that you have mentioned are going to suck everything up. And because citrus are surface rooting, they're really going to suffer.
I figured that because my other trees are doing really well. My question is, what with the Queensland fruit fly and the citrus gall wasp, I have trimmed them right back because of all that. If I don't care about the fruit production, can I just leave them there as a tree, or would I be torturing them to leave them there?
Well, they will gradually get worse and worse each year. But what I do say to gardeners, if you are going to have citrus trees and you're not really concerned if they're fruit or not, please still control the citrus gall wasp. So, no, it's not a problem. I mean, I think they're a beautiful evergreen tree anyway. And if you're not interested in the fruit production, as long as you look after the pest control issue, they will still grow. They just won't give you, you know, you'll probably get 10% as much fruit.
Absolutely, but they're not being tortured as such. No.
They will understand that they've only got a limited amount of water and nutrient available. Plants are clever, and they'll go, okay, so I can give you leaves and I can be green, but I can't give you fruit.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Okay.
You've answered my question. Thanks, Gloria.
Thank you. Gary says, I've had my whole front garden of about 200 metre squares, goodness me, out with all natives with the intention that it will simply be a walk-through bushland. I've planted it out. Mm. I would send photos if I wasn't driving. However, my question is, I have bought some everlasting seeds and I'm wondering whether to spread the seeds before or after the mulch goes down.
You would have to do it after the mulch goes down, Gary, because the seed is very fine and it may not be able to push through the mulch. And the other thing is they're a bit susceptible to getting a fungal disease and not germinating.
There you go. Now, Bev in Mandra says, how do you eat toast if you don't chew? She purees it.
You don't need to chew. You don't need to chew toast that much.
Really,
I mean, apart from the rye, I do. I eat rye bread.
I've got to bake you a loaf of bread.
Breakfast with Mark Gibson.
I'm sleeping out at Perth Zoo to raise money for Vinnies, and you can win tickets to watch The Breakfast Show live, plus get a VIP tour of the zoo. Tune into Breakfast for your chance to win.
On 102.5 ABC Perth. It is that time again.
It is.
Sabrina's musical pick of the week. Pick of the week.
Here we go now.
What have you unearthed for us here today?
Well, right up my alley, this little tune's called Stay If You Want to Dance.
Oh, nice.
And it's by Miles Smith.
Lovely. If you want to dance, stay. Oh, that was a sharp ending. Who was that? Miles someone?
Miles Smith.
That's easy to remember for Sabrina's pick of the week.
Roots and Shoots Gardening on 102.5 ABC Perth and ABC Radio WA.
I wonder if any of you read Wild Dark Shore by Australian writer Charlotte McConaghy last year. It's a fictional story about an international seed bank on a very cold island between New Zealand and Antarctica. Seed banks are actually located on the Australian mainland and are brought together by the vital work, the Australian Seed Bank Partnership, who are marking 15 years of collaboration this year. Joining me on the line is Sue McDougall, a committee member and spokesperson for the Australian Seed Bank Partnership. Hi, Sue. Welcome to Roots and Shoots.
Oh, so nice to chat to you today on this lovely chilly winter morning, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I do love it. Tell me what the Australian Seed Bank partnership does, Sue.
It's actually a group of partnership or seed banks that come together predominantly from the state botanic gardens, but there are seed banks that are involved broader than that. But it's a safety net. And when we talk safety net for seeds, there are so many threatened species. We've got over 1,500 threatened species in Australia. The seed bank conserves those, collects those threatened species, is a suppository for research. Having being able to restore some of those threatened species is something that's really important. But allowing that research and conserving those seeds for the future, we know how threatened those seeds are. And it's not just threatened species now, it's those species that are vulnerable for the future also.
Actually, that's a good point, Sue. I don't think people understand just the shortage of seed supply we have even now just for re-veg.
Wow.
Oh, that's so exactly, Sabrina. We just don't
have... It's scary.
And there's nowhere where they can collect that except those conservation areas. So we're trying to restore those areas, but where do we get the seed for those areas? And sometimes, you know, when we're thinking about our Banksia species, some of that seed costs $4 or $5 per seed.
I know. Banksia seeds are so, because they are rare, and that's you know, part of this corridor for Carnaby's. The Wingen Association will be in partnership, and they're going to set up a whole area for the revegetation of different Banksias and actually create a seed bank. So, but it's not just Banksias, is it? It's across the board.
It certainly is. We talk about caledonias, we talk about our orchid species, some of those species that aren't considered. You know, we talk about keystone species and they're the ones that do get all the profile. But it's just understanding what we can conserve, and it's probably seed banking is one of the most practical and easy to do, most in reach ways of being able to start that conservation message, start being able to conserve those seeds to allow research. So traditionally, seed banks are a giant freezer. We dry the seeds down so there's only a very small amount of moisture, and then they're cryovacked, and then they're stored in temperatures minus 18 degrees. So that's traditionally where most seeds are. But our West Australian and also our Australian seeds, not all of them respond to that. So that research for bringing them out of that conservation seed bank and out of that environment, and then just understanding how they respond, is something that's really important. So safeguarding seeds for the future, conservation seeds for the future, is really important. And Sabrina, the Seed Bank Partnership is bringing all of that knowledge together. And you and I have been around long enough that we remember the Millennium Seed Bank project.
Yeah.
Well, it's really exciting because the Seed Bank Partnership is a follow-on from that. So then the State Botanic Gardens and also broader conservation seed banks got together and said, well, we really need to do this. We need to do this for Australia's future, for our unique flora really needs a chance. And of course, if we can all get together, it's like an insurance for our environment, really.
Yeah.
So that's why I think celebrating 15 years is so important.
It is amazing. Yeah. And it's heartening to know that we have a little bit of insurance there.
It strikes me as both pessimistic and optimistic at the same time, like the fact that we need to do it, and clearly we do. The voice you're listening to is Sue McDougall, who is a committee member and spokesperson for the Australian Seed Bank Partnership, and the Australian Seed Bank has been going for 15 years. So we've got Sue on the phone to celebrate that and to tell us a little bit about how it works. And I've got to say, I was astonished to learn that we don't have enough for re-veg.
It's the seed shortage, the diversity of seed is just not available.
Okay.
So the big problem, I think, and Sue would know more about this than I would, that when they're doing re-big, you know, all the carbon sequestering and putting in, you know, as much biodiversity as possible, the diversity of seed is not there for these big projects. So we're seeing, you know, a domination of just 10 species.
Right.
So the work that you guys do, Sue, is vital.
So
yeah, and it needs to be upscaled, that's for sure. I mean, we talk about small conservation. Some of these conservation collections, Sabrina, are only 100 seeds. Wow. And so we really need to build on that and also talk about it, tell everyone how important it is, being able to be advocates for policy, to change policy and for funding.
Yeah.
Because our future, we don't think about it until it's too late. And the bushfires in 2000 over east are testament to that.
Yeah.
You know, we think about the species. The seed banks were called on to be able to re-veg these areas, and there just wasn't the seed there because there wasn't the projects or the funding or the research that really needed it. So when you talk about the seed banking being both optimistic and pessimistic, I think we really all need to have very big, loud voices and say how important seed banking is, and it is insurance. It's superannuation for Australia, really.
I feel like I'm always imploring people who are listening to, there's always a call to action, like, what can we do to help? You know, it was World Ocean Day this week. There's something, conservation is something that we, this audience deeply cares about. Is there something that we can do to make sure that the voice is loud? What are we doing?
Exactly. Take action in your local area. I often say that.
Okay.
You can learn more with a seedpartnership.org.au. Just being able to conserve your seeds if you're involved in a local environmental group, being able to network with the people and join with the people, and also conserve seeds in your local area. Understand seed banking. Are there techniques that we can use for local seed banking? Can we support the Australian Seed Bank Partnership by joining areas and saying, look, I've got these seeds, love to conserve them. Is there a research project in this? Some of the species, we're still working out how they actually germinate. You know, they're fire responsive. Do they need stratifying in some other way? What do we do, and how can we just understand what we've got?
So I feel like I've just had a glimpse of my future. I want to be a mad seed lady. And I think that
we could,
yes, and I think we could perhaps have a whole cohort within the audience. We've got fronds with benefits in the audience. We've got men who prune too much. And so I think now there's room for mad seed ladies, and we can all the mad seed men.
I would love
that. Let's do it.
Can I put up my hand to be a member?
Yes. Excellent.
All right, we'll find out what we can do. Sue McDougall, what a joy and a delight. Thank you for the work you do, and thanks for having a chat.
Oh, thanks to the team. Thank you.
Thanks, Susie.
Melissa is in Mount Hawthorne. Melissa, hello to you. What's your question for Sab?
I planted two hard shell almonds, a pollinating pair, 2 summers ago. So they've survived 2 summers.
Yeah.
The garden's pretty sandy soiled, and it's a sort of a raised garden bed. It's a retaining wall down to a driveway. So they're in maybe only 2 metres wide of sand, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And they just, so when, I've never had fruit before, so they grow in their little beautiful suede pouch, and then that sort of bursts open and inside is the almond.
Yes.
But the almonds look really small, and sometimes they just don't seem hard and well well formed, and I'm just wondering what I might be lacking in the garden to really strengthen them up a bit.
Okay, so the hard, so it could be a pollination problem. So with the hard shell almonds, you do need two, and you've already got two. You need 2 almonds for cross-pollination. So it may be a pollination problem. I don't think it'll be a soil problem, Melissa. The thing about the hard shell almonds is they usually take, you know, 4 years to, they're not as fast as the soft shell almonds. So they can take 4 years to develop the nut really well. You could always fertilize. Do you fertilize them in spring and summer?
I just have, it was really the end of summer, sadly. I added, I think it was potash sort of.
Okay. So you will need to fertilise them in the beginning of spring, because almonds, the leaves shoot quite early compared to other deciduous plants. So you need to feed them at the beginning of spring with a fertiliser that's got the whole shoot and match, not just potassium. You can give them sulphate of potash extra in spring, but you need a full swathe of all the nutrients, all the minerals at the beginning of spring, and then you fertilise them again at the beginning of summer.
So is that fertiliser a specialist nut?
No, you just need, okay. Yeah, you want, you look at the back of the bag or the packet of fertiliser, make sure that it's got good levels of potassium, but also everything else, iron, magnesium, manganese, sulphur, all those sorts of things.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, Melissa. Olivia is in Mount Hawthorne. Hi, Olivia.
Good morning, Amber and Sabrina.
Morning.
I have a Tipuana tipu tree in my front yard.
Yeah.
I don't know how old it is. It's very well established.
Yeah.
But over the last kind of few months, I've noticed some health problems with it. I've noticed sawdust in the soil around the roots. Also, when we prune the branches from the top, some of those branches have like bark that has been stripped, quite big kind of chunks and quite big holes. So I'm not sure what it is. We thought it was birds initially, but now I'm worried it's some kind of borer or something.
Yeah, look, if you've got, okay, a couple of things. The Tipuana do get borer. I don't know if it's just the beetle borer or if it's the longicorn borer. I don't know if it's the polyphagus.
Okay.
So they make very small holes, but the whole branch will start dying back, not necessarily the bark peeling off. So the bark, so I would say that it's a different borer. Now, what happens if your tree either has something like dieback or an anthracnose? Then you get that peeling off of the bark. So with borer or fungal disease, then the termites move in. So if you've got frass, or as in sawdust at the base, it's a good sign it's borer and or termites.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That sounds like, what's going on. And there is a bit of dieback on one side, I've just noticed, in the last couple of weeks. So
okay. So I'd say you've now got termites as well.
Yeah.
So okay. You could.
Is there any saving it?
It depends how many termites are in the tree, Olivia, and how healthy the rest of the tree is. Tipuanas can be hard pruned and they will recover. But I would get a termite specialist out to come and check your tree.
Okay.
Because they can inject the tree, and if it's not too bad, it just kills the living termites that are there, and then you can save your tree.
Okay, great. It would be a horrible loss if we had to get rid of it, because it provides us good shade and it's very well established.
Yeah.
So. We'd like to try and keep it.
Yeah,
right,
so I'll definitely get someone a termite inspection done.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks, Olivia.
Thank you, Olivia. People are very keen to be a mad seed lady. Maybe we turn into glad seed ladies, because it's a bit derogatory, the old mental elf thing. There's another call too. Hi, ladies, we need retired teachers. Get on board to support schools in sustainability programs. Teachersforclimate.com.au.
Oh.
I tell you what, I think there's been such a response to the notion of us becoming seed warriors. Roots and Shoots has an army of people, and they are uniformly people with very good souls. So I think what I might try and do for next week is get Sue McDougall on and just find out specifically what we can do.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
In our
idea.
Local neighbourhoods. We spoke to Friends of Bold Park this morning. They're doing guided bushwalks at the moment with the Indigenous season in mind and what's in flower.
Yep.
Those guys are going to know what those plants are.
Absolutely.
And so if we can just connect all of those little local groups, I think we can find a way. And also
local councils are having, yeah. you know, they have fantastic little areas like Bold Park. So that happens in every community. There yeah. are these wonderful reserves, and then the knowledge of the people that actually look after those reserves.
I am on a weekly basis blown away by the good people who come here every week for Roots and Shoots, and Mary's one of them. Hello, Mary.
Oh, hello. Good morning. I want to give my experience in growing cockatoo food.
Oh, please do, Mary.
Yes. Some years ago when I came here, I'm in North Perth, one of the old places, I took out the remains of the old backyard dunny and a lump of concrete that was around it.
Yeah.
And I put in a Mary, and they take about, 5 or 6 years before they flower. But anyway, it's been flowering the last few years. And just yesterday, I went out and on the honky nuts on the ground, the carnabies are often obviously in there.
Yeah.
I can tell by the way they've been eaten off. I didn't hear them when they were here. But that was great. And out in the front garden, the other day, I was out there and about 3 metres away from me, a carnabies came in and landed on a Banksia prionotis, which was only a couple of metres tall on the side fence, and was sitting there. And I've also seen one there eating something off the Banksia.
Yeah.
Right here in front of me.
Wow.
Which is a real thrill. But, so the I've also got a couple of Hakea orthorhynchus in.
Oh, great.
One in the back and one in the front. And there's masses of red flowers there coming out now.
That is the most beautiful Hakea, Mary. It really
is.
Yeah.
And where I've grown it before, in my other place where I live, the carnabies used to come into it and they break off the nuts. I mean, I can't break them off.
No, that's the thing about the carnabies. They can, you know, those, and Hakea orthorhynchus is just the most stunning Hakea. So, Mary, thank you so much. And it's amazing that they've come so close to you when you've walked outside. Goes to show, if we plant it, they will come.
If we plant it, they will come. Beth in Dongara, Beth, is your sweet potato the famous Christmas sweet potato?
No, it isn't. Hello, ladies.
Hi.
So it's just one, I found a bag floating down the street, so I planted the sweet potato in it from cuttings.
Yeah.
And I've had a disaster. I know I did ring you about this before, Sabby, because you told me to put them in the sun.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because they weren't in the sun, they were beside our tap.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why they died, but I just didn't get anything. I just got these piddly little things.
Yeah.
And I put them in compost.
Yep.
And, you know, lots of microbes and all the good stuff, but I'm just wondering if you could head me in the right direction for this year. I have got some more things.
Yep.
Or, you know, how they spring up, and I've just got them. They've got little roots on them now.
Great. Okay, so you need to lay them horizontally in the ground with only the first two leaves sticking up out of the soil. Are you going to put them in bags, or are you going to put them in the ground, Beth?
I'm just going to try it in bags because we've got pretty average sand here.
Okay, so do not overwater because they will rot really quickly. So lay them down horizontally so you've got two or three nodes under the soil, the tips of the top two leaves sticking out. Don't overwater. Give them some liquid fertilizer because you want them to be up and running. So once a week is all you'll need to water them.
Great. And can I just ask you one quick question about something you said on Tuesday?
Yeah.
About the Silver Princess. So I bought a Silver Princess. It's about a foot and a half tall.
Yeah.
And you said if you cut it, it will develop more.
Yeah, branches. Yeah.
Branches. But I'm a bit worried about doing that. Is it too late at a foot and a half?
No.
Nope. Cut it?
Well, you
absolutely
need one of our
not.
Men who prune too much.
Yeah,
here.
That's
See
exactly right. No, it's not too late.
Not too late. Get in there, girl.
Whereabouts do I cut it?
Well, I haven't seen your tree, but take a third off, but no more than a third.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Beth, quick answer for Lockie, who's looking for a natural onion weed solution.
Okay, I tell you what it is, Lockie. It is your body and hands and persistence.
Oh, Lockie.
There is a herbicide that you can get that's like a, I'll give you a hint, like a sledgehammer, but you need to be careful with that and you must only touch the onion weed. Or you just keep digging it out for the next 10 years.
Did you hear all that, Lockie? Yeah.
Yeah, got it. Thank you. That's a really good help. I heard there might be a better solution.
Sam, I heard that if you just rip its little leaf off and it just never gets the chance to photosynthesize, is that a thing you can do?
For 10 years you keep doing that. It's only 10 years, Lockie. You sound like a young fella. You got good 10 years up your sleeve.
Yeah, on your Lockie. Thanks for calling and thank you for such an enthusiastic. I'm sorry to the rest of you. We've run out of time. I'll try to get through. Just Blokes for Banksias, excuse me, suggests Andy. That sounds like a good idea to me.
Yes.
And what else have we got?
A large woolly bush, got to lean on. Can it be pruned? Yes, prune it now.
Prune it now.
Yeah.
What's this? Pruned our lily peely and then the big winds came through. Are they going to be okay, this person says.
Yeah.
She's giving one-word answers. Here we go.
Yep. They've just been stripped by the wind. They'll get new leaves. It'll be all right. Fertilise them. They'll come back.
So I did ask the boss once, and I'm going to get on to her about this, if we could have some badges. What do you call them? Buttons.
Yeah, we need buttons.
We've got men who prune too much, bog witch, Roots and Shoots Army, if you can think of another thing to put on a badge for Roots and Shoots, 0437 221025. It is 9 o'clock. There's 10 o'clock. The Sporty Boys are waiting to come in. Thanks for your company. Thanks for listening. You can join us live on Saturdays from 9 o'clock.
Head to abc.net.au/Perth.
Or listen on your radio to ABC Perth on DAB Plus or 720 AM.
You can text your questions in on 0437 922 720.
Call us in the studio on 1300 222 720. Roots and Shoots will be back midweek to answer more of your gardening questions. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating.
And share the episode with all your friends.